Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Grant Us Knowledge podcast. I'm Grant Golubon, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania, which is a statewide grassroots organization, thousands of member activists in every corner of Pennsylvania, dedicated to breaking down barriers to opportunity for all Pennsylvanians and helping them to realize their versions of the American dream. With the new year now upon us and now well underway, with it begins a new session of the Pennsylvania General Assembly. This session in just about a month has already been very busy and seen a great deal of activity, and things are about to get even busier as budget season gets underway. To discuss what's already been accomplished this session, as well as what may be coming in the next several months, I have a very special guest today. He's represented the 171st Legislative District, encompassing parts of Center and Mifflin counties since his election in 1996. And in June 2020, he was elected by his colleagues as House Majority Leader in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. It's my pleasure to welcome to Grant Us Knowledge Representative Kerry Benninghoff. Mr. Leader, how are you today?
I am very, very good. I appreciate the honor of being on your program.
No, thank you. The honor is mine. I very much appreciate it. I wanted to just begin by talking about what's been going on this session. I mean, you and your colleagues have been very focused at getting to work on a couple of very important priorities related to the state's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. And just wondered if you could talk a little bit about the underlying factors with those initiatives and how they're intended to make things better going forward in the state as we try to recover.
Well, you know, there's a lot of energy has been spent talking about 2020 and what's gone in the past and the challenges of the pandemic. But, you know, throughout our history as a country and as a state, challenges have always also, in my opinion, create opportunity. And that's kind of where I'm at as a new majority leader. We're in a new time of our year. And I think we need to be looking forward and learn from the past, but continue to move forward. One of our top goals is obviously trying to get economic stimulus going in our state, getting people back employed. You know, there's been a lot of dependency on the federal government giving out bailout dollars, but they only last so long. And really, that's just your money coming back in some other titled program. When we believe a stronger economy, people going to work, doing that American dream, earning a check, coming home proudly, taking care of the families, is where we really need to focus. Unfortunately, some of that has because we've had a lot of orders coming down from the administration, really dictating when businesses can be open, what their hours, the capacity of people being involved, whether you can go to school, whether you can go to church. And I think Pennsylvanians have just exhausted from this, both emotionally, financially, and physically. And we're trying to have an attitude change there. With the vaccine rollout that's coming, fortunately, we've known for 5 months that is coming. It's been a little bit slow here in Pennsylvania. We rank somewhere around 43 or 44th in the country as far as how we are rolling out this vaccine. We think it needs to be better than that. The Department of Health recently said that it would probably be till April or maybe mid-April till we had everyone in nursing homes vaccinated. I don't think there's anybody that doesn't understand that's the most vulnerable part of our population. That should be a number one priority, and that should already have been done. And we need to keep focusing on that. So this week we voted a bill through, authored by Representative Tim O'Neill, that would allow us to utilize the National Guard to help with a massive rollout. Ironically, there was this recent interesting article about when they had the polio problem in the last century. And it's going to take a cooperative effort between the national government and state governments, but we need to have a plan. Pennsylvania has not had a very good plan. And therefore, we, the General Assembly, took action and said, it's one thing the military can do well, it's get people vaccinated, in addition to the great protection they provide us. And we should utilize that experience and those services. We've utilized them throughout this pandemic for testing. Why would we not involve them as our supplies come in and just use their organizational skills to try to get a smoother, faster, consistent rollout? Because at the end of the day, I think the average Pennsylvania wants that comfort. If they choose to be vaccinated, those that are back in the working community want to know that they are protected, and therefore we can grow our economy. So that's kind of a quick overview of all that.
No, absolutely. That makes complete logical sense. And it also shows why it's important to have legislative input in this. I mean, as you mentioned, that the governor has been acting largely on his own for the duration of the pandemic. And that was also something I know that you and your colleagues have been working very hard at, both in the House and the Senate, at trying to restore the voice of the legislature in decision making and advice, and by extension, giving the people back their voice in terms of how the decisions that are being made that affect them are coming down. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Well, Grant, you're absolutely right. We've been asking since the beginning of the pandemic, not because we necessarily think that we know better, although we have some very bright individuals who have worked in different healthcare-related industries as well as the military, to just be part of the decision-making. We historically, in the last 10 months, we'd get a phone call an hour before a press conference would occur to be told the latest edict coming down either out of administration or the Department of Health. I think the Department of Health's former secretary worked very independent and did a lot of what she wanted to do. The General Assembly has been saying, we're here. We want to help. We are closer to the people. You know, my caucus and my members, we represent about 65,000. The Senate represents about 250,000, and we just have not been involved. Ironically, once we passed Tim O'Neill's bill, which encourages the utilization of the National Guard as part of this pandemic rollout, then we got a call from the administration saying, hey, would you guys be interested in participating on a multiple interagency panel to discuss vaccine rollout? Regardless of how that finally came to fruition, and which is supposed to occur relatively soon, we're glad it is. And again, we're not looking back, we're looking forward. But more importantly, this week and last week, we passed Senate Bill 2, which would put some constraints on these disaster declarations. Many people don't realize Pennsylvania's been on multiple disaster declarations. The opioid addiction one has been renewed, I think, 12 times. And it is over 4 years since its inception, and that's ridiculous. And the General Assembly's had little to no say in any of that. This current pandemic, I believe, has been renewed 3 to 4 times. Senate Bill 2 would say that you, the people, will let your voice to be heard, not only through representative government, through us, but we're actually going to provide the opportunity for you to go to the ballot, hopefully in May, and decide whether or not you think, after 21 days of a disaster declaration declared by a governor, regardless of party, that before it could be extended, that the General Assembly would have a say in that. We think that's a good balance in government. It allows the people who have elected their representatives and their senators to know that their voices are being heard. But more importantly, we're literally taking it to the people and letting you have a voice in there. We're not against governors having the ability to call a disaster. We are against one person, one elected official in a state of 13 million having total control over that, especially expanding those, having the ability to put these edicts down and shut down businesses without the General Assembly of representative government also having a voice.
Yes. I mean, that's always the danger whenever one person has the sort of the unilateral authority, regardless of how well-intentioned that individual may be. And as you said, this applies to any governor going forward, regardless. It's just that in terms of such a large, diverse commonwealth as ours, it's so critical to have the input of people through their representatives of such widely ranging backgrounds and get the best information to the decision makers so that they can take advantage of that, adjust course as is needed, and be able to do this. It's not micromanaging. It's not an attempt for the legislature to take over the management of a crisis. It's just giving the people back the voice that they should have had all along in terms of how their lives and their livelihoods are being affected by management of a crisis.
Grant, you say it excellently. You know, just a couple of weeks ago, I had called in because under the 1A section of those who should be receiving the vaccine first, one of the lists of individuals or professions is caregivers. And one of the things that we heard a lot on a local level are from some of our own constituents who are also caregivers. They may not be formally trained or registered nurses or respiratory therapists, but they are 24-hour, 365-day caregivers, whether for an elderly parent, a child with chronic needs or some other individual of their loved ones that they take care of on a day-to-day basis, but yet they still have to go out and get groceries, they still have to go out and go to work. In addition to this, we felt that they should also fall under it. And I called down, talked to our health, explained my thoughts, and that's when they said, well, yeah, we didn't think about that. We were just thinking about paid caregivers. All the more reason to have involvement of your legislators with this. This is not a battle or turf battle, and we're not here to prove who's right, who's wrong. It's about something that shouldn't even be partisan. It's about how do we best deliver services to the people and share our experiences in the everyday conversations that we have with our constituents to make this rollout smoother and make this pandemic a little bit more bearable to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no one has a monopoly on good information, and the idea that that more information is being brought to bear is it's always better to have more input than less and be able to sincerely apply that for the good of all the citizens of Pennsylvania. In terms of
their pandemic, people want to see us working together. You can have partisan debates and rivalries for other reasons, but not in the middle of a pandemic.
No, absolutely. That's something that we should all be able to agree upon. I know that, of course, not all issues necessarily are going to lend themselves as much to a nonpartisan approach as the pandemic should be. I mean, one of those that is coming up, as I mentioned in the intro, is budget season. And of course, there are vast philosophical differences in terms of how the state what the state should spend money on and how much. And of course, the governor delivered his address last week. It was very similar in content to many of the previous ones I know you've heard, but it did have a few wrinkles that are unique going forward, especially on the tax proposal side. I mean, one thing we've heard over and over again, of course, is the severance tax imposition, but now the personal income tax proposal the governor has. Can you talk about your reaction initially to what you heard and what you've seen as far as what you think of what the governor is looking to try to do here?
Well, philosophically, I kind of know where the governor's at. He proposed a $5 billion tax increase when he first came, with an additional $8 billion the following year. But as a Republican caucus, we did not support that. And in return, we've gotten through the last 5 or 6 years without having those types of massive tax increases. I would tell you, hearing this particular budget in introduction, I was a little bit surprised. And for your listeners, a governor can give a proposal. That's what a budget address is. It is not a concrete document, and none of it becomes law unless the legislature introduces some of that or all of it as legislation to pass to deal with the different, what we call five different codes of the areas of the budget, whether it's education, fiscal, administrative, general appropriations. That being said, I think what was most dumbfounding for most of us is most people don't realize the average business person pays their taxes through our personal income tax. Just because you're called a business does not mean you pay a corporate income tax, as many of our large businesses, like a large pharmaceutical or Ford Motor Company or something like that. So they're paying the same type of tax level through the same system you and I do as individuals. And to want to raise that 46% of an increase during a time when people are not even earning the same amount of money they did less than 12 months ago was a little bit mind-boggling. In addition to that was the mandate to increase minimum wage, starting at $12 with a target of getting it to $15. While it's always admirable to want to give people more money per hour, I grew up under the system where you earn it. I worked 2 or 3 jobs most of my life in order to get to where I am today. But to impose a mandated salary increase for all employees, minimum starting salary, at the same time taxing those same businesses, many of which have either been closed, partially closed, or have had somewhere between 50 to 75% revenue shortfalls, was just mind-boggling. That is completely opposite of what we want to do, trying to stimulate the economy, getting people back to work, and growing a healthy economy. So I was a little bit surprised by all that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I wouldn't be surprised to see the governor pushing for tax increases, because that's what he's done. But the magnitude of the increase from 3.07% to 4.49% on the personal income tax, first of all, being that not only the fact that it's paid by so many small businesses, the ones that are still around after the effects of the shutdowns and related pandemic orders, but also the fact that this is one of the only advantages that we can really point to in Pennsylvania as a draw for businesses to either to move in or for people to start businesses. And by chipping away at that, that makes very, very little sense. And at the same time, you mentioned the minimum wage increase. The governor made a point in his address of talking about his care and solicitousness for those Pennsylvanians who are just starting out and trying to make it easier for them. Well, I don't know of too many policies that could be more harmful to the young worker just starting out trying to get a foothold in the workforce than to artificially raise the minimum wage and therefore destroy the very types of jobs that help people get their start in life and on the road to a better life in the workforce.
Yeah, these types of policy, especially in a state like Pennsylvania, as you may know, we do not tax retirement income. We are the third largest aging state in the nation, so we have a significant part of our population that is retired, not paying any personal income tax. And now he wants to put the additional load on that segment of our population that is paying a personal income tax. You know, lower wage earners don't really pay personal income tax either. While they may get it deducted out of the check, it is all reimbursed through their tax filing at the end of the year. So you have this middle segment of individuals called working people who will be hit the hardest. Most of them, as you said, are probably starting young families, hoping to get a home, whether new or used. And many of them are still paying off college debt for 10 to 15 years post graduation. And now to hit them with a 46% increase on top of that is almost unbearable. Well, it will be unbearable. And some of them graduated from college and several years later started their own businesses where they're employing 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, maybe even 20 people at this point, 10 years down the road. So they're paying personal income tax for their company. They have employees, which are trying to help pay and provide them health care. And all this additional burdensome costs, we're going to do two things. One, it's going to reduce the amount of people that they can hire and maybe require them to lay some people off. And two, it freezes their ability to give people raises when they now have a mandated salary for any new employee coming in and a significant tax burden. That is counterintuitive to growing an economy. Our consistency with the flat tax of 3.07, as you said, is one of the few things that makes it attractive for people to come to Pennsylvania to start a business or keep one here and grow it. The goal is to grow not the size of the building, but the number of employees when we talk about growing businesses.
No, absolutely. And the governor also made the point that the tax system is really good for people like him, and he feels that I guess he came across as feeling somehow undertaxed. Well, there's nothing stopping the governor and his family from writing an additional check to the Treasury if they feel that they're undertaxed. But don't raise everyone else's taxes on top of that, because families and businesses struggling to get by can't afford, even in the best of times, can't afford additional burdens. And that's what the governor's proposed here.
Well, you look at some of your listeners' bases, and they need to look around their neighborhoods. Many of them don't have large factories. They don't have large businesses that are producing 500 to 600 jobs, so they're very dependent on multiple small business, whether it's an insurance firm, whether it's a hair salon or beauty aid type thing, or even somebody that's producing something that's made on a lathe or some machine shop. But most of those aren't that big of businesses. But the beauty of when you have many of those in a small community, they are consistent. It's kind of like having a rope made out of multiple strands versus one strand, that you lose a company that has 600 jobs all at one time and it crushes a small community, that we cannot afford that. And one thing I want to say real quick on it is I have been so proud of so many of our small business owners and leaders around here, because most of them have worked very hard to keep their health care provided to their employees, even those that they have had to furlough and not be working as many hours. And to some extent, some of these business owners took no money out of their own income in order to make sure they paid their employees and kept health care going for them throughout this pandemic. And that speaks volumes to Pennsylvania entrepreneurs and to Americans in general. But you can only do this so long before you go under.
That's something that I think doesn't get anywhere and anywhere near the amount of attention it should, is the amount of care and closeness there is. And I think that the smaller the business is, just as the smaller a government unit is, the closer it is to the people, the smaller the business is, the more personal relationship there is between the people that are signing the checks and the people that are getting the checks. And there's that additional loyalty and care for each other. And I know that, you know, toward that end, you and your colleagues on the General Assembly Republican side have been thinking ahead about how can we get more of that activity? How can we allow more people to start businesses, more people to get jobs, more people to put down roots and grow families in Pennsylvania, with an initiative that you're calling making Pennsylvania the envy of the East? And can you talk about some of the initiatives that underlie that and how going forward that's going to help Pennsylvania become the competitor that it needs to be?
Well, I'm a big believer in individuals and individuals' own self-initiative. And I put together something called Economic Recovery Task Force. And some of the members that have worked in business or served in different businesses prior to coming to the legislature, because I want them to be my eyes and ears, to be making suggestions to me. They're going to put a legislative package together as well. But, you know, there's an awful lot of great innovation that's gone on in this country. You look how quickly we all suddenly decided that we could make our own ventilators. We can produce our own PPE equipments, badly needed in the beginning of this pandemic. We had car manufacturers retooling themselves so they could make ventilators. We had people who produce all kinds of different commodities suddenly converting over to making protective masks and gowns. Point is, Americans, when challenged and given the opportunity and getting government out of the way, are very innovative. Pennsylvania has tremendous research institutions, education institutions, abundant of natural resources, whether it's our woodlands, some of our pristine waterways, as well as our natural gas and some other commodities. We need to allow these people to develop themselves, grow, create jobs without government strangulating them. So one of the first things I've asked our chairman to do is look at whatever regulations your committee has purview over. When new regulations are proposed, a message comes to the appropriate committee, i.e. if it has to do with tax codes, it would go to our finance committee, and they are to give comments on that, whether they think it's appropriate, whether it needs older, or whatever else. And I said to them, any of these that have been suspended for the last 10 to 11 months under the governor's shutdown orders, I think need to be reviewed and decide upon whether we really need them. If you could suspend them for 10 or 12 months, something says they either need modified significantly or maybe they're insignificant. That's number one. When you talk to businesses, it's not just about tax reform, but it's about not being regulated to death and having consistent in government regulations and rulings. So I think that's the first good start. I want to capitalize on these different commodities I mentioned a little bit earlier on and figure out ways that we can develop them to the best of our ability. And obviously looking at the tax code. Had a lengthy discussion with Pittsburgh Chamber today. They're very interested in lowering the corporate net income tax. That's an admirable goal. We've heard the governor speak about this in the past. But it's one thing to have an admirable goal or a good political talking point. But if it's only a talking point and not put in action, headhunters and people outside of Pennsylvania aren't going to bring businesses here. The chamber's new chairman is very astute, young man, started a business, and he understands that. And we need to be smarter about that. We need to make Pennsylvania attractive. And in addition to that, we need to keep good tax policy, marginalize our regulatory overreach in order to maintain the businesses that are still here trying to survive. And my goal at the end of the day is to have people outside of Pennsylvania or other states that I see advertising on TV all the time about coming to Michigan, coming to North Carolina, coming to South Carolina. I want them saying, Pennsylvania's got it going on. They understand. They're reducing the cost of their health care. They're being less litigative. They're doing tort reform, they're reducing their taxes, and they're wanting people to come here, stay here, and develop us here. We cannot be just a state where people come back to retire at because it's a lot cheaper to live here when you're retired. I want us to be envied by other states to say, Pennsylvania is on fire, they know what they're doing, and that's a place to work, live, and raise your family.
Now, and what strikes me about this approach is how different it is from the approach that's been taken so often in the past, regardless of who's been in the governor's mansion or who's been in the General Assembly. I mean, Pennsylvania has for years relied so heavily on economic development incentives, borrowing, you know, Governor Rendell's initiatives, but you know, going back to Governor Ridge as well, thinking about how the government has been attempting to pick winners and losers using the tax dollars of some Pennsylvania businesses in order to enrich the bottom lines of others. And all that has done has gotten us stagnation and gotten us rankings at the bottom or near the bottom of the country in terms of job growth and population growth, personal income growth. By going in the direction that you're talking about gives every business a chance to succeed rather than just the ones that are politically connected enough to be able to get an incentive package or get a break on certain regulatory policies or other things that the government has total influence over.
Grant, you couldn't have said it better. When you talk about tax credits, tax incentives, tax increases, more regulations, you are picking winners and losers every time. If I tax you more to my benefit, you lose, I win. If I give you incentives to come here, I don't want to have to pay people to come here. I want people to come here because it's the place they want to be. It's up and comer. We're creative about what our work environments, which I think COVID is going to force more and more businesses to think about that as people have learned to work at home. I think you're going to see a lot of IT businesses, billing departments, and those things not necessarily have to be in a brick and mortar business. So we have to be creative, and government has to respond just as well and not be trying to pay or entice people with financial incentives to be here. And I've heard it over my time here, well, that's what other states are doing. No, we don't have to do what other states are doing just because they're doing it. We need to be on fire and let people look at this place like, wow, that's where I want to be. I want my business there. I want my kids to want to live here, and I want the next generation to want to be here. But right now, it's a disincentive when you have almost a 10% corporate net income tax, high litigation, high cost of health care, and lawsuits that are out the wazoo. Why would you want to bring a business here? Why would I want to jeopardize everything I've worked for and try to grow in the area that is always restraining me through too much government overreach?
Well, the initiatives you're talking about definitely will do a lot to change not only the image but the reality of doing business in Pennsylvania. One final thing I wanted to ask you about, thinking about innovations, pandemic-related and others, is in the area of healthcare. We've seen a lot of changes to that, driven by the pandemic. Things like the expansion of telemedicine, and other ways of trying to free up existing practitioners, such as nurse practitioners, to be able to more fully utilize their skills, especially in underserved areas of Pennsylvania, whether they're rural or urban. What sorts of initiatives are you looking at there? Knowing that your background professionally heavily healthcare related, and you've always had an interest in those sorts of policies and issues.
Well, thank you, Grant. It's funny because prior to coming here, I was a county coroner, so some people have a hard time parlaying that to understanding healthcare, but I actually worked in a hospital prior to that. Doesn't make me an expert on anything, but has me very intrigued because, you know, I was there before CAT scanners were here. I was there before MRIs came in, and you see where technology has taken us. We cannot continue to operate as though we're still in the 20th century, and I think we have to be that kind of proactive in our mindset and our thought. Yes, telemedicine provides a tremendous opportunity. I joke people and say that when cell phones came along, my kids were practicing telemedicine because they'd take a picture of a rash or a bump they had and send it to their dad and ask for an evaluation. But COVID has actually had some positive pressure on us because it's forced us to have to be innovative and allows us to doctor different than we have in the past. And I think people's expectations are also. For too long, we've been kind of stuck in old past practices, and you mentioned about scopes of practice expansion. You know, some different practitioners do not want someone else to have access to their turf. But nurses of today are much different than they were of the past. Many of our nurses take their RN degrees far beyond that, become nurse practitioners, midwives, and a multitude of other skills in addition to that. And they should be compensated as well, but they provide a tremendous service in many of our rural areas because a lot of people that come out of medical school have $200,000-$400,000 worth of debt, and they a lot of times will go to the urban areas that generally pay higher in order to try to help pay this debt down. So what does that do for rural Pennsylvania? It allows them to have voids in a lot of specialty cares, and people have to travel tremendous amount of places in order to get those types of things. So the more we allow different type practitioners to show their proficiency, pass the exams, whatever they need to do to expand their scope of practice, the better. We've recently done that with the nurse practitioner bill. While it wasn't everything that they wanted, it allowed them to take on some additional patient care without having to get the stamp of a doctor every time they make a move. We've done that with the ophthalmologists and the optometrists. That's been an ongoing battle for the 20 years I've been there. Optometrists may not have as much schooling as ophthalmologists, who generally do the surgeries and more invasive procedures, but there are some other less invasive procedures that they can do, providing good quality care, eye care, in areas that do not have an optometrist and people can't travel to. So it's that kind of looking outside the box and not doing things as we've always done them for the sake of just doing them that way, but trying to be more proactive. Again, that's why having, if you do a good look back on what happened with the pandemic, we got to pick up on the things that were positive, that we learned from it, and have better practices for the future.
Well, it sounds as if in so many different policy areas, you've got a good idea of where you want to lead and the innovations that you'd like to see continue. And again, I want to thank you very much for all your time today. This has been terrific, and I wish you all the best. And, of course, we'll be out here pushing right alongside for many, if not most, if not many, if not all, the things that you're talking about here, because they're right in line with the AFP's mission to break barriers and expand opportunity for individual Pennsylvanians to empower themselves and to take initiative and be the captains of their own lives and make their own American dream come true here in Pennsylvania. Thank you again, Leader Benninghoff. I appreciate all the time.
I appreciate that tremendously. And I think your listeners are very blessed to have people like you talking about it. And I hope that they'll be excited too and want to have these discussions with their legislators and have set these expectations. I'll give you a closing comment. You think about when I started here, a cell phone was a bag phone. It looked like a field radio. It did two things and didn't do either one of them very well. Yeah. And look where technology has taken us in 20 years. Amazing.
Absolutely. Well, looking forward to Good days ahead, I'm sure of it. Looking forward to going further and faster as we head off into this year and the rest of the session to come. So, again, thank you again for your time. We really, really appreciate it. And good luck with all the work, and we'll certainly be in touch, and our folks will certainly be in touch with theirs out there in the field as we get along.
We look forward to working together with your partnership and with your listeners.
All right.
Take care. Have a great day. And remember, let's make Pennsylvania the envy of the East.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Leader Benninghoff, and signing off for now on another edition of the Grant Us Knowledge podcast. This is Grant Gulbemont, continuing in the words of the late great economist and social commentator Walter E. Williams, to push back the frontiers of ignorance and sell my fellow man on the blessings of liberty. Thank you all very much, and look forward to speaking with you again soon.